Hey, Abe, I'm on the highway. What are you doing?
I am trying to record some crappy audio from my computer.
Well, if I'm involved, it's probably crappy audio.
That's our expectation of quality.
That's true. It's true. You can't oversell yourself. So.
Well, if your entire shtick is that your audio and other qualities suck, when you deliver on those things, I think people are satisfied.
Yeah, why do you think I've been doing this?
Flailing in mediocrity.
That's right, baby. That's right. That will happen.
That will happen.
I saw a T-shirt today that it literally was made that says that will happen.
And do you think that people
logo,
send us
logo
some shirts that say that will happen so that we can wear our own shirts?
Yeah, he's going to send me some. He says
that's nice of him.
Yeah. So
where?
Today I was at One Lap of America at Blackhawk Farms. I did some work this morning, and then I struggled through Chicago traffic to get out there.
It's a long drive.
It's like 99 miles, but it took me twice as long as it should have because there's a lot of traffic. So,
did you go out? What is it? 90?
Yeah, I took the normal way up the tollway, and then across the other tollway, and then up the next tollway. But there wasn't any faster way. It was traffic for the first 60 miles.
That's something about Chicago I don't miss at all, right? Like,
no,
even when there's no reason for there to be traffic, there's a lot.
Yeah,
just because a lot of people live there.
Yeah, not always the funnest.
So some stuff happened today.
That was the first one lap thing that I've actually been to. You've done the event, and you've also been like to the start of the event when you weren't doing it. But there's a good vibe at the one lap paddock. It was cool, man. I knew I'll bet you I knew 30 people there, which was kind of fun.
I'm sure.
So that was saw a lot of Grid Life drivers. Saw a lot of. And I didn't even talk to all of them, but I saw a lot of alums of Slip Angle. Some people that I have talked to on the phone, but have never even met in person, stuff like that.
Well, I think one of my favorite parts about that event is in traditional Time Attack and other racing that we're more familiar with, being able to be extremely fast on command in the rain right now is not a requirement to doing well. And in one lap it is. And I appreciate it when DeRoos and Yonkers and the other guys get in line first to go out and drive hard in the rain, because that's like a skill that you have to practice to be good at. And only guys who take the chance to do it will get better.
Yeah. Finding that, it was wet probably for a third of their sessions throughout the week so far, finding that line to run all the way up to, but not cross in the rain. Like for some people it takes a lot of time. And you can tell that some of these drivers today, it was like no big deal. It's just how they drive.
And I really admire the people who can do that really well, because it's just something tough. I don't know that people would jump at the opportunity to go do a rain DE day.
No.
But in order to do well at this event, you have to be ready to do that.
Well, it's like Richard from England has, he said to me I actually prefer a wet day, I think. because it's like what they get over there more than not, it seems. I do more and more. I do seem to like a wet track day, and I think part of that is because as an event organizer, it sets the
vibe.
It takes the seriousness down a notch, which I kind of like. As somebody who is kind of the organizer of serious events in some aspect,
I think the tone changes, right? Because no one goes out knowing that they're going to set their personal best. And
the urgency,
the expectation
urgency
is not
down.
That.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Then it becomes driver development again, which is fun.
And the intent is I'm going to go out and enjoy myself and learn and have fun.
Absolutely. The Blackhawk is obviously as awesome as, as it ever is. I love that place. It's just, there's some really good old school vibes at Blackhawk. I dig that track.
Did you have a chance to hang out with Jeff?
No, I didn't talk to corner worker Jeff. Jan, the track manager, saw me, and then I talked to him for a long time, and I met the new event director, and so I did some official grid lifey stuff. And that was part of the reason I wanted to go out there. They have some new staff. Just like the nicest people in the world, too.
Yeah,
I just love that place. The food is awesome, too. That's another plus of a racetrack.
It's because they sell cheese curds.
Yeah, it's cheap and awesome at the same time. So,
yep.
It's just Blackhawk. I dig Blackhawk a lot. So,
love a big Blackhawk.
Yeah. You got to say it properly. You can't slur that word. It sounds bad. I seem really drawn back to One Lap of America now. Which is bad because I don't have time.
Yeah, I don't have time either. But I looked at my vacation time, and it looks like all of it is going to Grid Life, and of it is
unfortunately.
Like weekend. I mean, it's like Friday, Mondays, and I'm really lucky in that I have 20 vacation days this year, and I would say that 15 of them are going to Grid Life, and 5 of them are going to be traveling with Ashley to go see some F1 events. And we were at IMSA last weekend, which was super cool. I had some experiences
that I did
not expect. It was super fun.
It looked wet. It looked very wet.
The first 2 days sucked. And we were there like supporting Tom and the LA Honda World team. So he and Shelby Blackstock were running all weekend. And it was unfortunate, I guess, a lot of the time, because it seemed like... you know, they were making 50-50 calls and nothing ever seemed to pan out for them. So in the race on Saturday, they made a call during the race at the driver change that they were going to put wets on and hope that it started raining, and it never panned out.
Yeah, because it looked like it was going to, but it never got wetter, really.
Nope. And then, like, I think Shelby went out on Saturday morning and, didn't... put down his best lap immediately, and the conditions worsened like every minute. And so every lap that everyone did was worse. And so the driver that took pole was the one that did their fast lap as soon as they possibly could.
Yeah, that was the Hart TCR car, and that was Chad Gilsinger.
Yep.
Eric Cotill is on their crew, and he said that Chad just went for it immediately. And not got lucky, but got lucky with the timing on that, because the conditions got so progressively worse.
Yep. So it seemed like, you know, maybe lap 7 or 8 during qualifying, it was just like, it's not even close. So Hart made a lot of good calls. I think they struggled in the race because they went off at some point, but I mean, I really enjoyed watching that. I think, a couple of hours is a really good distance for a race because you start to get some pit strategy and stuff involved. It was my first IMSA event to watch the prototypes also, which I thought was super cool. I got some really interesting and like up close opportunities with those cars, and that was neat. The thing that I struggled with when watching IMSA prototypes is that the race is like 3 hours long. And if you're not able to listen to the IMSA radio commentary, it's actually not incredibly interesting to watch. It looks like a DE, right? Because you can only be at one corner at a time, and if you're watching that corner and not a whole lot of passing is happening, well, then you're watching cars go around a corner.
Yep. That's sort of the only disadvantage, like, really from a spectator perspective to endurance racing, is it's hard to know who's winning.
And like Mid-Ohio doesn't have a ton of video boards, and the sound equipment wasn't loud enough so that you could hear it over the cars. So if you had like headphones in and were listening to the radio, I think it would actually be pretty cool. But then it becomes not a very good vibe hanging out with your buddies event, because you got your headphones in, you know?
Yeah. You almost need to have like a boom box playing, you know?
Yeah, kind of. I was there.
I,
hanging with Tom. And then Dan Lewis kind of gave me the VIP treatment, which was super, super cool. And I'm really grateful that I got the opportunity.
One of our Time Attack drivers from Grid Life. What's his relationship with the Konica Minolta team?
Okay, so the company that he works for is Amatec, and I know about them because they make, I think, power supplies for scientific equipment. So okay. He actually runs in some of the same professional circles that I do. I've never met him professionally at a conference, but he goes to conferences that some of my coworkers go to. That company sponsors the Wayne Taylor Racing prototype program, which is the Konica Minolta program also.
Yeah, like the biggest program.
Yeah. So interestingly, on Saturday night, we had dinner with Wayne Taylor of Wayne Taylor Racing. And me and Dan Lewis just sat next to Wayne listening to stories about, you know, what it was like to talk to Fernando Alonso and how he thought, you know, going to the Indy program was such a bad idea. And like how he had called up, Zach Brown from McLaren and said they're blowing it. And just did like a bunch of crazy, crazy stories. That was dinner for me and Ashley on Saturday night.
It's so bizarre. I talked to Ed from AutoSF Saturday night. Late, I was working on the race car until like 1 a.m. and I posted a picture in one of the Grid Life group chats. So Ed calls me and he's like, "You won't believe this. Abe had dinner with Wayne Taylor." And I'm like, "No."
So Wayne Taylor let me try some of his steak. It was weird.
That's crazy.
No, but it was weird because I've I don't know how much money this person has. He owns a race team, so it's probably a lot. But it was weird because I went to dinner and there's a group of like 12 people or whatever. And it was as if the entire wait staff knew that Wayne Taylor controlled this entire table. And so they waited on him personally and they gave him the wine list and they answered to him. And like everyone else just kind of was like there. Yeah. But he was the nicest guy. It was super cool.
Did you get invited to the dinner or did you happen to be there and then they pulled you over?
Dan invited me and Ashley as his guest, which was cool. But while we were there, they gave us an invite to the shop, which interestingly is like 20 minutes from my house. So their team is based in Brownsburg, which is just a little bit farther west from where I live. So at some point, hopefully in the off season, I'll be able to go there and kind of check things out. The car is incredible. It's super, super cool. It's just like, it's a piece of engineering, unlike anything that I've ever seen.
That's so cool. Very, very interesting weekend, man. I'm jealous.
It was just weird. And then like all of us went back to Ed's house and, we had a bunch of drinks and then we tried to play iRacing with an Oculus, drunk.
Oh yeah, Ed said you sucked at iRacing. I was like, yeah, he sucked at my house too, but he's not as bad as I am.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. That was probably the 10th minute of total seat time in an iRacing car that I've ever had.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard at first, man.
Well, and especially with an Oculus after having been drinking, right?
Yeah, that would get weird, wouldn't it? I've never used a VR, but it looks hard.
I heard it wasn't like trying to drive slow cars. It was like, you know, driving a Radical, or I don't even remember the other car we were driving. It's like, I am not good at driving this. And like, what was so unfair is that Shelby was there too, and I am not about to try and like outdo a guy who does this for a living. Like, it's not even cool. Like, I don't know. I mean, he does this professionally and he's there watching me suck at it. And it's like, why are we even here? Why don't you just do this?
Yeah. It'd be like teaching Tom O'Gorman how to like, okay, here's how you drive my Ford Fiesta, Tom. And he'd be maybe you don't have to tell him. Maybe you just feel embarrassed for even doing it.
Yeah. Right. So it was a fun weekend and I think I enjoyed it. So
good.
We've got a few more weekend trips planned. We're going to Montreal for the Canadian Grand Prix And
that'll be a fun show.
That
it's
was
cool
her
city.
Idea. And then hopefully we'll get tickets for the U.S. Grand Prix also.
Cool. I got another about 45 minutes of driving. We talked to our buddy Little Jimmy Houghton to see how he's doing at GTA. Maybe we should see if we can get a hold of him and make a whole show out of this whole thing.
I think that's a great idea.
All right, let's pause this and we'll see if we can get a hold of James.
Hey, James.
Dicks. Don't say dicks as the first word, James.
Dicks. Everyone's got dicks as a freeway.
Oh, man. Abe, how are our levels, Abe?
Your
are
levels
we recording?
Are appropriate.
That's what we're supposed to say.
I am not appropriate, but the levels are. So that's good.
James, how was the trip down to Atlanta?
Tiring. Terrible.
Yeah.
No, it was actually a great trip, but it was tiring because I only slept an hour and a bit the night before.
Yeah.
Because we were just finishing everything up, and then we were getting vinyl redone on the Tuesday. And then we left the Tuesday night at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I didn't drive that much that night because it was barely conscious, not conscious.
Yeah.
You know, all of your problems are because you live in Canada. If you lived closer to places
far.
Where they had races that you wanted to go, you wouldn't have to drive so far.
For sure, we'd have.
You should probably live and
leave later.
You know that it's rusty in Michigan. Also, you could just live there.
Yeah, there you go. That'll save a couple hours.
I don't know that there's a lot of stuff in Michigan other than gingerbread that I want.
Yeah, that's true. And it's not that far from where you live right now.
It's much more inexpensive, which would leave more money for race cars. That would be nice.
That's true. You could live on a crappy old farm and spray some cars with oil there.
I keep thinking I'm going to bring the Jeep to you, and you're just going to spray it down with a bunch of goop, and then it won't rust.
You have to do it. You have to come. Come to a CSES event, hang out, go check things out. Have a fun time and spray your car, and it'll be a great weekend.
That does sound nice.
Abe's car, he's not going to have that thing long enough to rust. That's the problem.
You know,
well, you should do
I don't
want to
jinx it, but I've driven it like 20,000 miles, and it hasn't had a problem.
In the last 20,000 miles? That's a long time.
I've driven it a lot. And I will say that from my house to Summit Point is one tank of fuel, and to come back is one tank of fuel. So it cost me, it was only about $150 to drive to and from Summit Point for me and Ashley.
I was pretty shocked how good a mileage I got with my RV, but not that good. Definitely
what kind of fuel economy do you get in your RV, James?
Well, we were moving on the way down because we were trying to get to the track by 5 o'clock. Because that's when they said that they were going to close the ticket booth or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was saying like 4:30, you know, 4:40 most of the day on the GPS. And when you're towing with an RV, keeping up with Google's GPS is very difficult.
Very, very difficult.
We were going to make it, except for about 2 hours away from the track, we had stopped for fuel. And they had like a Papa John's pizza or something like that in the gas station. And we were like, how long is this going to take? She's like, not very long. I'm like, can you get us two pizzas in 10 minutes? She's like, yes, I can. 25 minutes later, we walked out the door with pizzas.
Well, at least you got pizza.
And we were 15 minutes late getting to the track. And luckily, they stayed open an extra hour at the ticket booth. So we would have kept up basically with Google, which was serious. There was a lot of 75 miles an hour.
So
that poor little V10.
On Friday night at Summit, Adam sent me out to get pizza for literally everyone who wanted some. And I wanted to call in advance and hope they had enough hot and readies. But it was like a 20-minute drive, and all the road was like windy and hilly and jumpy. And so I couldn't like pay attention to the map and the phone at the same time. And so I showed up at Little Caesars at like, 9:30 or whatever. And I was like, I want 10 hot and readies. And the high school girl who was at the register just goes, it's going to be a while. And so, I know exactly what that's like.
Yeah, it's going to be a while.
She has so much potential for that business. She's really going to work up. She's going to work her way up through that company if she's going to respond like
that. Oh, yeah. So, bright future for her.
It's interesting about Summit Point is that it is like far from everywhere. And my fuel light came on the way to the Little Caesars. And so I placed my order and I was like, I'm going to go find some fuel. And I drove for like 20 minutes and I found nothing. And so I went back and got my pizza and drove back to the track and then did all the rest of our stuff. And then Ashley and I left to go to the hotel and she was managing the GPS and she drove me like 20 minutes in the wrong direction and the fuel light's still on. And she's like, oh no, the GPS sent us the wrong way. We have to turn around. And we had to drive literally back to the track before we could go toward the hotel. And the tank is like 25 gallons. And I bet you I put 24.6 in. She was like, are we going to run out of gas?
I was like, when does your fuel light come on? A quarter tank?
I don't know, man. But we're pretty lucky we didn't have to push.
Yeah, seriously. James, you made more jam, and you made more arrow.
All the horse torques and all of the splitter.
Yeah. Give us the 2 minute like changes thing. Like, what did you all do and how the car?
So, change the turbo first. I guess not first. Kind of everything was happening at the same time.
Last time you were on the show, you were blowing up transmissions. So you changed a lot.
I forgot about that. So we have a Quaife sequential in there now. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Did that a long time ago. I'm not very smart, but we're smarter now.
Yeah.
And seems good so far. I mean, nothing lasts forever in a race car, but it seems to be better than what we had. So we're happy with that.
What are the failure points potentially?
What's that?
What's the primary failure mode for that if something does happen?
I don't know. I can't really say that. They some like Will has had pretty good luck with his, and
they seem pretty good.
So we have high hopes.
I was talking to Robert Thorne today at Blackhawk Farms, and he's got a Quaife sequential in his S2000, and he only complained about how loud it was, but it's done like thousands and thousands of street miles.
That car is so good.
Time attack.
I really, really just want him to prep it proper for one lap, because that car would destroy everything.
They're still dealing with the 5-6 gallon fuel capacity thing. It's crazy.
Well, I know why. It's because they didn't actually prep it this year. That was the ultimate.
No, it's
car.
An autocross car. Yeah. Anyway, so James got a sequential in. James made more horsepowers with more turbos.
Yep, we put a 3584 on there, made 911 wheel horsepower at 32 pounds of beast.
So crazy.
So we haven't ran it up there yet. We were just running it at 19 pounds today. So it's a little bit
on a Dynapack. Is that right?
Dynapack. Yep.
How do those compare to like dyno jets?
There's so much irregularities in dynos all across even from Dynapack to Dynapack sometimes. So,
is that right?
You know, it's we'll use it as a measure of reference. It made 780. Earlier this year, and now it makes 911 on the same dyno.
I think with a car like James, is the best thing about a hub dyno like that bolts in place with the wheels, is that there is no wheel spin. You can actually control it.
Yep, absolutely. And especially when you're trying to do kind of in and out of boost things and stuff like that.
You can tune the entire map a little easier, supposedly, too.
Yeah. So we have that on there. I said laggier before. I don't like to use the word laggy because it's not laggy at all. It just comes in a little bit later because it's a little bit bigger turbo. I mean, that's
for
part
the
of
turbo aficionados, that's boost threshold, not lag. They're not the same thing.
Exactly. So it's not an issue out there, especially with the gearing with the Quaife. It's pretty good. And we've got that aero package that Sage Sport and Syntech have been working on, and it's nutty. There is a lot of bump stop and a lot of packer in my car. And when I say a lot, I mean all of it.
So it is, like, the arrow is it's definitely working.
Yeah, we just actually did a ride height adjustment. We actually lifted the front end of the car half an inch because it was too much.
Cool. Oh wow.
Yeah. It was too hard to control at that ride height. And with the wing shape that we have, they'll actually work a little bit better, a little bit further off the ground. It's not
with
not
more air underneath it.
Yeah, it's not quite the same as the way a splitter works. From what I understand, from what I'm told, I'm not an expert on any of this, but so we put it up a little bit, changed the packer. We had a little bit more packer than I would have really liked in it. It was really coming down hard over some of the bumps. So we raised it up a bunch, took a little bit of packer out, and took a little bit of camber out because we actually quartered two tires this morning just in testing. With too much camber, I think, from the amount of pressure that the front end is actually being, putting on it. So we're throwing everything we can at it, and now there's a huge black cloud coming in, and it's supposed to rain for the next 2 days straight.
Gross.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So
does that mean you're
going to,
if the weather is okay, you're going to get Sunday, potentially?
No, it's just a Friday-Saturday event.
Oh, my mistake.
So it's going to get one lap at, 750 wheel, and if everything is good and it's still good, it's going to get the next lap at, 850 wheel if we have even one day session tomorrow morning, because there is no time to waste.
Yep. No, you got to go for it, huh?
Yep.
And so your new splitter design really isn't a splitter. It's literally a wing, so you do want some air underneath of it in order to be the low-pressure zone, right?
Definitely.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a wild looking setup. If you want to see it, there's pictures on your Instagram, right?
Yep, and we'll be posting more over the course of the weekend. I didn't post as much before because it wasn't wrapped yet, but on Tuesday I drove over 300 miles to Toronto and back, and then to Toronto again and back to get the car, the vinyl work touched up, so it would look presentable for this weekend. So before we drove down here, I just thought, I'd warm up for the drive a little bit with a quick 300 miles.
Oh, no big deal. Just a 6-hour tow.
Yeah, no big deal.
How did the car do in testing? You did a kind of a shakedown, I believe, right?
Yeah, same thing. Just trying to keep this thing off the ground and still, keep it. You don't want the thing to be a monster truck. But you got to get it to a height where it's happy. So I think that we've made a good adjustment right now. We were trying to do it more with just bump, stop, and packer when we were testing. We got there late. We only did a couple hours of testing. So I think it's going to be good now. I think the ride height adjustment change was good. We were at about 2 3/4 inches under the center of the front splitter wing before. And now we're about 3 1/4. So I think that small change is going to help a lot.
Awesome. Well, I hope you get some weather, man. I hope you get some good weather.
I hope so too. It's so much effort to kind of see that forecast looking like rain and thunderstorms. But the weather sometimes changes pretty drastically down here, so you never really know what you're going to end up with.
Did you bring your rain?
Yeah, you've got mountains all around you, kind of.
Oh yeah, we got rains. I was borrowing rear rains all last year. I only had fronts because I was just having a tough time, and I saw there was some on closeout at Hoosier, so I bought my own new rear rains. So now I have a set of four.
Nice.
I don't have to borrow them anymore.
Well, usually when you buy rain tires, that's when it does not rain for you. So that's like your best. That's your best foot forward to getting good weather.
I hope so.
Yeah, that's always the joke. Is don't worry, I bought new rain tires, so it's not going to rain.
Adam, you know who would be really fun to take on one lap? James.
What's that?
I said, you know who'd be really fun to take on one
lap? James would be fun.
James. We just let him drive the whole time and just hang out and record shows.
That's sort of what we were going to do with Tom McGorman in your car last year, but then your car
Tom's
broke.
Too pro now. He's never going to have a free weekend ever.
Yeah, I know. He does get, he's got all that job stuff to do.
I would find time for that. I would definitely.
Yeah,
it
could be fun.
That.
I was at one lap today, and I kind of fell in love with the concept of one lap again. And I've always wanted to do it forever, pretty seriously. I just never kind of put it together. And now I really want to, but the problem is we're hosting too many events.
I've been practicing the last couple of years for staying awake for the whole week. So
you certainly have. You've got that part
dialed. I don't know if I can do a whole week yet, but we're getting closer.
the dudes who were fast, the guys in the the first two run groups, they looked pretty well rested.
The other night when they got to Hastings, it seemed like everyone showed up to the hotel around 3 a.m.
Yeah, that seemed like their worst transit. But yeah, I would love to do that someday.
3 a.m. and then sleep for 4 hours? That sounds luxurious.
That actually doesn't sound too much worse than every race.
A big difference here, James, between the way you travel and the way people on One Lap travel is that you travel in an RV, which is kind of comfortable. You're not traveling in the race car.
But a lot of, we came to Grid Life South last year, we left late and drove through the night, and I drove the whole trip except for 3 hours. So it's not really the same when you're doing all of the driving in the RV.
So yeah. I can say that
Moss
and Smedegaard are driving with ear protection on.
They said that car is not
car. They could have just put it
is not as comfortable. Yeah. Andy said the Evo was much more comfortable than that car.
The car is so good though. I was in it at NCM,
it's cool.
Just the coolest.
I think they're in sixth place right now. That's what
they're creeping.
I think they left in fifth or sixth place. Yeah. So anyway, we should probably let James go play with his car and go get dinner and stuff. Maybe tomorrow we can do a quick check-in call and see how the weather was.
I hope we're talking about dry tracks and good lap times.
Yeah, we'll see if it works.
Maybe we can call you about this time tomorrow.
I think this would definitely work. I think this would definitely work tomorrow.
So today was just testing, right? Not timing?
Yeah, it didn't count. We only, like I say, we did about, I guess we did two kind of sort of flyers, not really flyers, but we did two laps just to kind of evaluate all the things. And then we had enough things to work on that we just, if it's not counting, what's the point in keeping on going out there and attacking?
Who else is there today?
Cool. What's that?
Who else is there today?
Probably about half the cars were here today for testing, I would say. Pro Awesome were here, and Tom O'Gorman was here, so they put a couple laps in and made a few adjustments.
Cool.
And we'll see what they come up with for tomorrow.
Awesome. If you can, write everybody's fastest lap down, so you can be our pit reporter also.
Sounds good.
Cool. Well, have a good time. Have a good time with the boys. Tell everybody we said hey.
Thank you very much, guys. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
I think everybody's here.
Oh, man. All right. Avery, you're recording.
I am recording.
Abe's recording. We're doing a thing.
Frickin' finally.
James, where are you at?
We're in Kentucky.
Man, you guys are making good time. Holy cow.
Like a torrential downpour and thunderstorm and flooding on the highway, so we're only going about 50 miles an hour or 55 miles an hour.
It's probably the slowest you've ever towed with that thing.
It's the slowest it's ever gone. Even on the two-lane road, it doesn't go this slow.
You're in the RV, right?
Yep.
Yeah. James tows it at like 95 in that thing.
So when you travel, do you do most of the driving, or do you guys do like rotations and shifts just to drive continuous?
We usually do rotations. So it depends on how I feel. On the way down, I barely drove at all at night. Ian drove most of the night shift because I was just dead. And then I drove basically the whole way, basically from 9 until 6 or whatever when we got there. But then last year when we went to Grid Life South, I drove all but 3 hours. It just depends how I feel. If I'm feeling good, I'll drive. If I'm not feeling good, I'll be in the back bed fast asleep.
It's hard for me to find anybody to drive the RV because they're usually drinking beer. Yeah, so I just kind of wheel it the whole time. But James, we got a few minutes. What happened? How'd it go?
So the air was unreal. It's not even, I can't even explain. What these guys have come up here with is next level.
All the downforce.
All of it. I can't even describe it. So we thought, for instance, on the lap where it failed today, I'll give you a hint there before what happened, but the lap where it failed, I thought I lifted into the S's, and afterwards, later, we were checking the data log, and Eric never likes to give me too much credit, as you guys know, but he's like, he comes over and he's like, well, you know, you thought you lifted for, you know, this much percentage for this much time, and he's like, the data log says that's a lie. I just kind of figure that he's like, you know, going to say that it's longer for that. Like, the data recorded no lift going into the S's.
Whoa.
You went flat through the S's in your car?
Yep.
That's crazy.
At about 825 wheel.
Really? So you were almost all the way up, huh?
Yeah. Well, 100.
Wow.
It's 26.
Yeah, that's like, it's still most of the 75 from the peak is a lot.
Yeah, so we didn't talk yesterday. So I did a 121.0, like, second lap yesterday after we made the, after they made the ride height and alignment and every, all those changes.
Right.
It went 120.0 right off the trailer yesterday. So that was amazing.
Yeah.
And we went out for the second session and had a problem with one of our pulleys. The belt came off. Got hot, so we came in. That was an issue, so we lost that session. And then the final, can we cut for a second? Do you guys hear the guys in the background, or is it not coming through?
A little bit, not much.
Is it enough that it's a problem?
I don't know. That's Abe's problem.
We're a low quality production. I don't know that anyone cares.
No, this is a phone call podcast right now. So. So James probably sounds better than me because, yeah, his phone call is probably bouncing between Canada and Kentucky and Indianapolis.
Okay, so we'll continue back. So what was I?
21-0.
Oh, 21-0.
You lost a pulley.
Lost a pulley, car got hot, and then the guys thrashed and got it ready for the final session yesterday, and these tires that we're on seem to leak some air sometimes and just too rushed, and I should have been on it myself, didn't check the tires, and I think that we went out with maybe a slow leak in the left front, It didn't even make it around to the start-finish to start the lap. It went down in 12, and that was a pretty scary deal, not going to lie.
What are you doing through 12, about 125 or something like that?
We haven't checked too much. We didn't, you know, we haven't really had enough data there to you know, really care that much this weekend because we basically turned no laps that work.
But it's over 100 miles an hour.
Over 120 miles an hour.
Yeah, it's down the hill really, really fast. Yeah.
Yeah. So it didn't actually fail in 12. It failed kind of halfway down the hill, maybe two-thirds of the way down the hill. But still, at that point, you're going, you know, very close to 130. And it's like, you know, you got to get this thing slowed up and turned and, you know, went into the grass a little bit, not too bad. And the car was okay, but it was frightening. It could have been a lot worse.
Yeah.
So did you have to make a full lap on a down tire?
No, I would have gotten a physical fight if they would have tried to make me drive around on the splitter with the down tire.
Yeah, I was watching the live stream and he pulled off track right against the concrete wall there. So that's about as out of the way as you can get. If you can't get to the track entrance on the left, pulling off track right is about as out of impact as you can get. I mean, still like a crazy thing could happen, but you're pretty safe there.
Yeah. And I went fairly far down the straight, you know, just kind of limped it down there to make sure that it was kind of out of the,
not in the pinball zone.
Yeah. I don't want to be any part of that. So we checked everything out and made sure the car was really good and went up and watched some of the drifting and stuff like that. And, we got kind of ready for the next day. It was supposed to pour with rain. We honestly didn't expect to turn any laps other than maybe a few wet laps for fun on the today. Once again, we woke up in the morning, and as same with Friday, it was supposed to pour all day on Friday, and it didn't rain at all. So, you know, kind of later in the evening. And here we go, Saturday again, supposed to pour all day, and we wake up Saturday morning, and the paddock is dry.
You're going to put yourself together and drive.
Yeah, put the fresh tires on, get all ready. Those tires, they need a second flyer. So go out and do, I think we did a 23 in the first lap. They just kind of put heat in them and just getting, you know, everything up to temp and getting the feel for it. And went at it really hard down the hill coming to the start of the second lap. Really got after it in turn one. The car felt amazing. Got up the hill, felt amazing. Through turn three, used a bit more curb than normal because I know that can be the fast way through there. Flat around through four, flat down into the S's, down a gear for turn five. Coming out of there, felt really good. And then grabbed fourth gear, and it went horse, and that was the end of it.
And the motor blew up, huh?
Motor blew up. Coming out of turn five, just before turn six.
So you're over 800 horsepower.
Yep.
Coming out of turn five, that's really a pretty fast area. You're kind of climbing uphill.
It is, but I bet it's like max load right there because you're climbing uphill and the car is going a little bit slower. And, you know.
But that load right there is a good oiling area for K-Series, because K-Series is on the opposite side of a Honda B or a D-Series. So it's probably not oil problems.
And with our Unit 2 pan, we don't have our Unit 2 Motorsports pan, we don't have any oiling issues anyway. So,
we're
seeing, you know, minimum oil pressures for a whole lap with like 70 PSI.
Yeah. So 1,000 crank horsepower can only go for so long on a K-Series.
Yeah. Well, and we'll see more about what happens when we get back and it comes apart.
Yeah.
And we'll kind of, you know, hopefully we find something. Hopefully we find the reason. We very well might not.
Yeah.
But it'd be nice if we can kind of narrow it down a little bit. So
you've got a full backup motor at home, right?
We have an unsleeved backup motor, but we're working with JBR engines now. And they did the sleeving on that block. And they're working on, they were hoping to get it done in time for this weekend. It wouldn't have made a difference anyways, because by the time it blew up in the morning, there was only 3 hours before the final session. And that would have been stopped the way that car is. With the turbo and, you know, all the lines and everything like that. And I think some of the wiring is crispy and stuff like that too. It was a little bit of a fire. So nothing serious, but enough just to make a bit of a mess.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't have been able to get it in anyways, but he's said he's going to have that ready for us this week. So
cool.
we'll get everything cleaned up, get the motor out of there. We'll get everything cleaned up and get the new motor up. Back up to Canada and new wiring harness and stuff like that in there and get it ready for Midwest in a couple weeks.
That's so exciting.
Yeah, we got about 2.5 weeks right now. I was about to text you when I heard that you had a problem in our group chat about the podcast. You said that the car was on fire, and I was going to text you and say, so what kind of boat are you buying?
I did pretty good today. I think we saw that there was so much potential in this car this weekend. You know, it's different. When we had all those struggles at Midwest, the car wasn't fast anyways, and then it broke. And then that's when you buy the bass boat. But when the car is fast and breaks, then you don't necessarily always have to buy the bass boat.
So
going
forward with something like this, how do you, like, is it possible to do some more work with Evans Tuning and, like, stress the car on the dyno harder instead of just like spending time tuning, but actually just like, you know, put crazy amounts of load through it just to kind of simulate something realistic that you might see on the track?
I mean, you're seeing quite a bit of load on a Dynapack the way they load it up. And he does, you know, a bunch of variable RPMs and stuff like that. So he'll put it in boost at a certain RPM and not even let the engine RPMs rise sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just load it up.
It's seeing the crazy load on that dyno when he's doing his tuning.
Well, I mean, does it have 20 seconds of full throttle like the back straight at Road Atlanta?
I know it's not, but I wouldn't want to put that through it anyways. You know, how many, if it only has X amount of time in it, how much do you want to do on his dyno? You know, he might have to put a piece of cardboard under the engine because he's afraid of how long it's going to last, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You're still trying to find the longevity of all, like, there's 1,000 little pieces in there that can let go and hurt the motor. So if everything holds together, you get, you know, 25 laps, 30 laps. But Yes. Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you're playing a crazy game, James. When are you going to come race GLTC?
there's so much potential in this car. And
no, I'm just joking. I know. We've talked privately about it, and you're like, I don't know how long I can keep doing this, but I got to keep doing it for just a little while.
Yeah, I mean, we know that this car has amazing potential in it right now. To do a 121.0, you know, I don't count the first lap really that we did, because it's basically a warm up lap. You know, it's basically a second warm up lap on Friday. So when you do your first lap with a completely new car, really different turbo, different aero, different everything. Yeah. And the thing goes 21.0 at Road Atlanta, like first lap off the trailer on a green track after rain. You know, it's
pretty good.
Pretty motivating for the whole crew.
That's right there. That's right there.
Obviously we were there to break the record.
Sometimes
it happens. Sometimes it doesn't. You know,
Will still has the record, but you've shown the potential. So.
Yeah. So we're gonna work very hard on it. We're gonna try to make some improvements in between fixing the car, leading up to Midwest, and we'll give it our all again there.
That's awesome. You were talking about on the last portion of the show, you're talking about adding packers and adding bump stops and playing with springs and stuff. Do you think you found a pretty good setup for Road Atlanta, and how do you think that might translate into Gingerman going forward?
So we got it close enough, raised the front of the car quite a bit, and took a bunch of camber out of it and reset the toe. The car was a lot better after that. It's still on the splitter pretty bad under braking. But through the corners, it was a night and day difference. That car is not on the splitter at all in the corners. It feels fantastic. It's not being held up at all. The first day, you could actually feel the rub strips on the outside of the end plate holding the car up a little bit. With our changes, the car felt absolutely fantastic. But it was a bit violent, braking for turn one. With a high downforce car, those bumps are pretty violent.
You're probably over 100 miles an hour there into turn one.
Well, the braking zone is really the problem. As soon as you're off the brakes for turn one, it's not a problem. I'm pretty sure we're over 100 miles an hour minimum speed to turn one, but you know, the braking point for turn one is like 155.
Yeah.
So when you start getting into a nasty, bumpy braking zone at that kind of speed with that kind of downforce, that's gonna be nasty.
So
I was watching the live stream, and you could see the sparks flying off of Borsma's splitter. I didn't see any good shots of you doing that turn one, but a lot of people are hitting the. There a lot of people are rubbing going through turn one. It's very common. It's like bump, 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 bump. It's like six individual bumps going into turn one there.
You can actually see the rubber marks going over those bumps on the track where each one is. Is kind of higher than the low spot.
Yeah.
But Chris's car, we've got some work to do on it. It's doing some weird stuff with the suspension. So we're going to look at that as well and try to get that working a little bit better for Midwest, because it wasn't super happy this weekend. It was a bit of a struggle for him. So we're going to work hard to get that car prepped and showing good pace once again for Midwest.
I'd like it very much if you could try and bring a battle to Luke McGrew in the track mod class.
Yeah,
be pretty cool.
Good old battle. Good old battle. Gingerman might be a pretty good balance place for a car like Chris's versus a car like Luke's too. So.
James, Adam and I
doesn't
were...
have that much straightaway, but
if he turns the power up, it's gonna put some distance on him on the straight. It'll just be, you know, everywhere else, whether he can keep up or not.
So one thing I've seen with Luke is that he's a student of the data, and he is literally after every session. I mean, he'll do 7 or 8 laps a session, and he'll review and improve and review and improve the entire weekend. And maybe that's happening in other garages, but I guess I haven't seen as much of it. He's paying attention literally as soon as he gets out of the car. it's really impressive. Mm-hmm. And he has a setup that allows him to do that. I mean, that car has turned thousands of track miles.
That's what I was just going to say. It's fantastic to do that, and I'm a huge fan. But when you're struggling through issues sometimes, you have to have some data to compare. And if you don't really have any usable data to compare, you know, if I do one really mild lap and a hard lap and then another mild lap, I'm not going to start looking at theoretical best or anything like that between those three.
Sure.
I'm not going to start looking at sector times. If I've only done one actual hard full attack lap, there's no point in comparing.
Yeah. No, you got to do 20 or 30 like freaking Luke gets to do. Yeah.
Did we lose everybody?
Did we lose them?
All right, we're back with James.
Who would have thought that there'd be spots in the mountains of Kentucky that wouldn't have good cell reception?
Yeah, no kidding. So right before you dropped out, I was asking what you thought you saw at the speed trap in right before 10 in terms of miles per hour.
I would think that it's well into the 120s.
No.
We will.
Not 12, 10.
Oh, sorry, 12. Top speed going into 10?
Yep.
I think it was 166 this weekend. So we're seeing a little bit of drop in speed due to the drag in the aero and everything like that. Probably if we would have put a bit more power in it, got it up over 170. But it's fine. You know, we are 4 miles an hour slower than we were last year, and the car is making way more downforce.
Sure.
So we're willing to take that 4 mile an hour penalty because the straightaway speed or the cornering speeds are just way up everywhere. And honestly, on the back straight is the only spot where we're really seeing any loss in straight speed. Like even on the front straight, we're going faster than we were before because we're coming through 12 so much faster.
Yeah, I'd be really interested to see a data overlay from your lap from last year to your lap from this year just to see where the additional pace was coming from.
Yeah. I'm thinking that, you know, when we look at that a little bit more, it'll just be kind of everywhere and, you know, probably lose a tiny, tiny bit at the end of the back straight. But the traction control, with the traction control and the quave, the flat shift and everything, I bet you we're ahead enough 3/4 of the way down the straight that the little bit we lose at the end is probably just a wash. So I don't think we're too worried about it. And especially for a track like Gingerman, we're really looking forward to that. Hopefully we don't find anything hidden when we take this thing all apart.
No, for sure.
You never know.
Now, for the bits like the wiring harness and stuff that'll need to be repaired, is that something that's relatively easy to do on that car?
We use a K-tuned engine harness on it, and we've got a spare in the trailer anyway, so we're just going to we're not going to take any chances with that harness. We're going to put a new one on and just make sure that box is checked.
Awesome.
So we're going to try to make sure it can be as reliable as it possibly can before we head to Gingerman, because that's honestly one of our favorite events of the whole season. Not one of. This is my favorite event of the whole season.
I mean, we're kind of biased, but I like it too.
Yeah.
So thanks for spending some time with us, James. You should probably get back to driving. And if Adam were on the call, I'm sure he would congratulate you on a good weekend and a personal best. And I guess technically you won the event, right?
Yeah, well, it was funny. We were kind of thinking about it at the end of the last session. We were hoping to see what Pro Awesome could do, but they were struggling with their car as well. And we were waiting for the last session to see if they were going to be in blue crew on their time, and they weren't. And Eric and I were kind of walking back up the grid. And I said to him, I said, we've never won a GTA event overall before. And he kind of looked and he was kind of like, oh, you could see the kind of, you know, lightening of his face a little bit to think, well, that was kind of good that, you know, at least had some positive of it anyway. So
yeah, for sure.
Work on the positives and work on improving the car before Midwest and try to bring the best back as we can.
Cool, man. Well, drive safe, and I'm sure we'll talk to you before Midwest, but hopefully we'll be able to do a show with you at the event and talk a little bit more about the changes that have been made in the coming weeks, and hope to see you go faster.
Sounds good. Thanks so much. Have a great night.
Talk to you later, buddy.
Slip Angle was created by Austin Cabot and Adam Jabay, co-hosted by Derek Yarbrough and production by Abram Schmucker, who mixes all of our terrible audio. If you like the show, please rate us and review us on iTunes and come and find us in the pits at a grid live to say hello.